are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, October 30th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the Vindman testimony yesterday blows up Trump's transcript talking point. Meanwhile, Democrats unveil the impeachment process resolution. Chicago teacher strike in day 10. Deal, or at least a vote on a deal, could be imminent. Speaking of votes, the U.S. House votes to recognize the Armenian genocide. Ilhan Omar abstaining. Meanwhile, Mick Mulvaney on the outs, just as Sean Spicer iced out of meeting the Pope. Mulvaney not invited to the al-Baghdadi killing video. In Missouri, the Missouri health director kept a spreadsheet of Planned Parenthood patients' menstrual cycles to monitor their abortions. In a new report, many of the world's major cities may be underwater within 30 years. NCAA board approves athlete compensation, at least for the superstars, in terms of their images, their likenesses, their endorsements. And the Brazilian Supreme Court will investigate Bolsonaro's involvement in the assassination of Mario Franco. And New York sees two big lawsuits, shareholders versus Exxon and trafficking victims against a major hotel chain. All this and more on today's program. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us. A couple of just house cleaning notes right off the bat, so I do not forget. Go sign up for our Instagram. Follow us on Instagram. We're just at the brink of passing 10,000 followers.
We already did it.
Forget it.
But do it anyway.
Do it anyways, folks. And also, sign up for the AM Quickie. Give us a review. You can go to amquickie.com and subscribe through any of the... It's all free. Totally free. Totally free. 5 minutes a day. You will get the top headlines. Send us a review. If you have any critiques, always open to that. Send us one at majorityreporters@gmail.com. And also, check out the app. It has been completely refreshed. You can find the AM Quickie there. You can... watch the show live via YouTube through the app. You can watch, you can listen to the show live through the app. You can IM the show through the app. You can call the show through the app. And there's other stuff. You can search the archives through the app. You can find it at majorityapp.com. Now let's get into this. So, as you know, the Blaze's Dave Rubin blocked me some time ago, and I don't know if that's the Blaze policy. I don't know if you are on the Blaze, you need to block me. I doubt it. I can't imagine. I don't think I'm blocked by the Blaze owner, Glenn Beck. But once Dave Rubin went on the Blaze, he blocked me. There are other people on the Blaze. Like I say, they don't block me. And in a bit of synergy, the Blaze's Dave Rubin appeared on Fox's Tucker Carlson show. And because there's nothing a falsely aggrieved white guy likes more than another falsely aggrieved white guy. And so this is where the aggrievement meets. And of course, Dave lives in California, so they're bringing him on to talk about about these California wildfires. Now, everybody knows why we have these wildfires. It is because PG&E, the Pacific Gas and Electric Company, has hired too many people who are not white, as Dave helpfully explains to us.
And he joins us tonight. So, Dave, thanks so much for coming on. You moved to California because it's a beautiful place, and I agree with that. You've seen it really degrade in the time that you've been there, but PG&E strikes me as
pause it for
as
one second. I happen to know that the reason why Dave moved to California was because in New York, he just couldn't find work. As a comedian, I've been told this by multiple people, not just other comedians, but actually even writers, newspaper writers who used to write for comedy, used to get emails from Dave every time he had a tweet that went viral back in the day. And I digress. Now he's with the Blaze. He's very successful. Continue.
It's almost a metaphor for the destruction of the state. So here's the power of the utility, which doesn't really know anything about its own infrastructure, but knows everything about the race of its employees. How did we get there?
It's just unbelievable. Look, I've been in L.A. I'm in L.A. right now. I live about a minute away from one of the big fires that's still going. I have friends that are evacuated. Los Angeles, putting politics aside, in Southern California, might be the most beautiful part of the United States.
Yes.
The problem right now is that everything from academia to public utilities to politics, everything that goes woke, that buys into this ridiculous progressive ideology, that cares about what contractors are LGBT or how many black firemen we have or white this or Asian that, everything that goes that road eventually breaks down. It is not how freedom is supposed to operate. What is supposed to happen, Tucker, imagine if your house was on fire. Would you care what the public utility or what the fire company, what contractor they brought in, what gender or sexuality or any of those things he or she was? I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous.
Who would care?
And right now we've got a situation. Of course you wouldn't care. And we've got a situation right now where we're doing preemptive blackouts in this state, which I think is the 11th largest economy in the entire world. We do preemptive blackouts because they don't want to put too much power, too much pressure on the grid. I mean, try to imagine the absurdity.
Now, I'm trying to figure out how these two things are related. Is he suggesting that PG&E is so dominated by the black firemen or the LGBTQs or whatnot that they don't, that they're the reason why there are blackouts? He's saying one thing, like they're obsessed. Like they know the percentages of how many LGBTQ employees they have or Latino employees they have, but they're not doing grids. So are we to believe that these two things that he's referring are related? In other words, is the reason why PG&E is not doing the proper maintenance on their lines in running is it because there are people who are LGBTQ or Latino or black that are running these things?
They have too many hormones.
Maybe he'll wrap it up. Maybe he'll bring it together. Here we go.
Time for the grand synthesis.
Much power, too much pressure on the grid. I mean, try to imagine the absurdity of what's going on here. And I hate to tell you, but we just don't have enough clear thinking, say more libertarian or conservative minded people in California to fight what the progressives are doing to the state.
But if you can't keep the lights on and you can't keep the place from burning down, you've reached the point where there's no kind of lying about it anymore. Like, it's fallen apart. It's a disaster. It's not civilized anymore.
You know what? If I've learned anything by living
pause
in California,
not civilized anymore. That's an interesting choice of words.
A lot of interesting rhetoric here.
Yeah, civilized is a very interesting way of saying that we have a failed electrical grid, and that is not civilized. That's just a weird way of.
I have a graph here that shows the correlation of Chicano studies departments with wildfires. And a lot of people want you to focus on climate change. But I think if you look at this, I mean, the numbers are stunning. The whole thing's crazy.
No, it's a biblical explanation for a natural disaster.
Let's see what else he's got. Maybe it's so uncivilized, these guys.
In Los Angeles specifically, it's that no matter what happens, ideology seems to trump rationality.
Yes.
So in the 6 years that I've been here, the amount of homeless encampments have expanded. Virtually every exit you get off the 405 or the 101, there are now homeless people sitting right there, or actually that have basically built structures at the exits. Now, it's like if raising taxes on everybody and supposedly the progressive policies that care about poor people, if these things worked, wouldn't the places that progressive policies were enacted, wouldn't there be less homeless? Wouldn't there be less gun violence? All the things talk about. But no, there's always more. This is not a coincidence. These policies don't work. But there, if you just don't really think about them, if you think, oh, we just have to throw money at things, and they magically get better while you do whatever you want to do in your life and don't want to really think about the issues, then it all works. And that's what we all have to fight. I mean, everyone across the country, because, you know, I travel the country often and people will say to me, Dave, you got to stop the people from California moving here to Utah or moving here to Denver or moving here to Texas, because then they bring the bad policies of California elsewhere.
Build a wall. But, you know, walls are not just for our exterior borders, but that's just, you know, something to think about.
Okay.
What?
Because then what happens is people move to other places, but the places where they're liberal, the bad things are happening because they're trans. So the whole thing just really doesn't make any sense. But that's the situation we're in here.
Yeah, what policies is he talking about here?
I am quite sure if PG&E, I want to stay on PG&E because this is they're playing footage of thousands upon thousands of acres burning. We could even lose the Reagan Library, ladies and gentlemen.
There's a B-side of me doing We Are the World with the N-word in it.
And the idea that if PG&E, as he says, like, you know, throw money at it. The idea that if PG&E threw money at restoring and rebuilding the infrastructure in making sure that trees are not overhanging the power lines, or maybe burying some of the power lines in some very tenuous areas. The idea that doing this wouldn't help is absurd. I mean, this is a guy who's all about ideas and intellectualism. Yet, he doesn't even raise up the fact that over the past 5 years, PG&E has thrown off $4.5 billion to its shareholders. And when Dave was questioned on this absurdity on Twitter, he linked to this opinion piece. People were questioning his opinion, and he defended it with somebody else's opinion from the Wall Street Journal, talking about stakeholder capitalism in action. By the left's lights, PG&E is a perfect corporate citizen. Liberal California Pauls attack it anyway. So in other words, despite the fact that I say that they think PG&E is a perfect corporate citizen, they're still attacked anyways. So that sort of leaves a question. Well, then why would they do that? Now, she doesn't answer that question. Alyssa Finley of the Wall Street Journal, Fox-owned Wall Street Journal, editorial board. She says PG&E exemplifies the left's stakeholder model, according to which businesses are accountable not only to their shareholders, but to their workers, the environment, and local communities, and society at large. In practice, it means businesses exist to serve their political overlords. Now, the idea that PG&E exemplifies the stakeholder model, and they're not accountable to their shareholders, $4.5 billion over the past 5 years, $1 billion a year, practically given to their shareholders, as opposed to be put back into developing the infrastructure. And, you know, we see this with electric companies all across the country. When I lived upstate, everybody said after Niagara Mohawk sold out to National Grid, Nobody came by anymore to cut down the trees that were threatening the wires until the wires fell, because it was just cheaper for them to do it that way. But who pays for that? Well, everybody who loses power pays for it, because they can't go to work, or they have to throw out their food, or they have to figure out another way of creating heat for themselves. This is a perfect example of privatizing the profits and socializing the costs. Now, her argument is that somehow they're getting the state law requiring them to get renewable sources of energy by 2030 is, she just throws it in there. It doesn't quite, the line drawn, it's just like what Dave Rubin did. The line drawn between their premise that this is all about the fact that they have 43.9% of their employees belonging to ethnic minorities and there's fires. So ipso facto, those two must be related. But we don't quite see the line. They have detailed records on who their employees are, I guess. But that doesn't prohibit them from getting detailed records on their transmission towers and wires. There's a reason why they don't do that, because they don't want to make it public how much they are not investing in their infrastructure, which is why what we should be doing is taking this company and either have it be owned by the state or owned by the federal government. There is no reason why we need this company to be private and pay out $4.5 billion in dividends to its shareholders. We could take those $4.5 billion and put them into the infrastructure and make it incredibly safe. And therefore, the state doesn't have to pay for the firemen, even though half of them apparently are prisoners getting a buck a day or something. And so that people don't have to lose their homes and insurance rates don't have to go up. I mean, this is, not to mention, obviously, in a heightened environment for fires because of climate change. But this isn't going away. And so the bottom line is, looking forward, do you want to pay out to shareholders all the money that should be going into building infrastructure? Or do you want to continue this until it just gets completely untenable, where you have multiple weeks of blackouts? Now, Dave Rubin can blame the fact that it's LGBTQ hiring and
PG-LGBTQ.
It sounds like he thinks PG&E is responsible for hiring all the firefighters, right? And there's just like a big long line of
PG&E set out a directive
waiting to fight the fires. And PG&E is like, no, no, no. We have to wait for a disabled Latina to walk up.
PG&E sent out a directive from the top to the stakeholder model, because that's what the left likes, to say that only transgender disabled people can fight the fires, and they might be nice people. I mean, look, I'm married to a guy, but I don't think they have the mobility.
Look at the data that she cites. Stakeholders, those are in quotes, were mentioned 13 times in PG&E's 2018 shareholder report, compared with 3 times in 2014 and 0 in 2011. Now, it really begs the question, what's going on in 2012 and 2013 and 2015 and 16? But I have a feeling that that contravenes her point. But I don't even know what the point is. Like, as if the words, putting the word stakeholder in your annual report and somehow prevents you from actually investing. I mean, this is such Bush League distraction from the main point that's here, that it would be stunning if Dave Rubin wasn't involved with it. I mean, honestly, it's like, who can we get to actually come on and say this stuff in public?
You now, want to talk about the apocalyptic forest fires consuming the most important state in the country? I got you covered. It's the gay people. And by the way, I have a husband.
That's the other thing. Apparently, somebody said something to him like, this is a little bit racist of you and bigoted, because, of course, like, you are somehow implying that if we hire 48% of our employees are so-called ethnic minorities, if we do that, then it's going to lead to this type of stuff. And here is Dave Rubin. Now, he's blocked me on Twitter, and so I had to take a screenshot. But this is Dave Rubin saying, hi, Anna Navarro. Nothing I said was racist or homophobic.
Actually, that's a great way to begin a sentence.
Right.
Hi, Anna Navarro. Nothing I said was racist or homophobic.
And where's the proof? Where's the proof from this guy who believes that identity politics are ruining everything? Here's the proof. Actually, not that it matters, but I'm married to a man.
Seems like it matters a little to him.
Apparently it does matter in this argument for whatever reason he seems to think. It has.
And I'm then, gay. I call take back.
And then here's a piece in the Wall Street Journal on how wokeness is affecting PG&E. He wrote PS&G in California because white men are so competent. It is not a piece which explains how wokeness. It's an opinion that there shouldn't be wokeness there, but there is absolutely no because of this that
you know
at
what's
all
super
involved
woke
this.
Prison slave labor.
That's super woke. And he just says, have a great day. And then, of course, he goes on to beg Judd Apatow to come on his show because they went to high school together. We share an identity in that we went to high school together. Do you want to have me on?
That's so sad.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So there it is. Dave Rubin.
Judd Apatow is not open to your ideas. And by the way, Jed, I'm actually married to a man.
So not that it matters.
Not that it matters.
But the funny thing is that, again, how does he argue that Judd should come on his show? By their shared identity. We went to the same high school together.
I'm surrounded by standpoint epistemology.
Yeah. I can't get outside of my own viewpoint. All I can do is filter it through my own experience, which
folks,
is an intense desire to get paid.
People's feedback loops interrupted.
Folks, Babbel offers you 14 different languages you can learn. I do not believe any of them are Dave Rubinese, but nevertheless, Babbel will get you speaking a new language quickly and with confidence. You can choose, like I said, from 14 different languages: Spanish, French, Italian, Danish, I believe it was, Russian, Portuguese,
Brazilian Portuguese.
Oh, and I am wearing a t-shirt from Mexico today.
There you go.
So, topical.
Lula Libre.
Spoke a lot of Spanish in Oaxaca.
Muy bueno. Babbel's teaching method in speech recognition technology has been proven effective across multiple studies. Their lessons are lovingly created by over 100 language experts. Those are human beings, folks. They're not machines that translate or algorithms. They're engaging and convenient lessons. They last about 10 to 15 minutes. You learn through interactive dialogue so you can perfect your pronunciation and accent. Babbel is available as an app. It's available online. Your progress syncs across all of the platforms that you use. So today I'm using my iPad. Tomorrow I'm using my iPhone or my Android. And then, you know what? I'm going to sit in front of the computer today just to, I don't know, because the kids have taken all my devices, whatever it is. But we're going to, we got to start. Maybe we need to do is like get a start date for this. Should we do like the first week in November and do the Babbel challenge?
What does the Babbel challenge entail?
Babbel's challenge is going to be like who speaks Spanish quick, sooner than others. We got
to maybe we should have like, people have to, I think people should have to IM like phrases and whoever can translate the phrase the best in their language.
Oh, that's a good idea. So that it's like a completely random
test.
Oh, that is good. Because you guys listen to this show, Babbel has a very special offer for you. Go to Babbel.com, select the language of your choice. Once you try for free and are ready to sign up, select the 3-month option. Babbel will give you an additional 3 months for free. That's with promo code MAJORITY. That's 6 months for the cost of 3 with promo code MAJORITY. Go to Babbel, Babbel.com. Enter promo code MAJORITY. Babbel, speak a new language with confidence. Also, this is very helpful for me, and particularly when, I mean, when I travel, regardless of where it is. This is, I don't know if it comes off. I'm a little bit neurotic. I'm a little bit concerned. I have, you know, with my online security, all sorts of security.
Do you see?
It's true. I use an incredibly intricate web of passwords with multiple email addresses that I don't associate with them so that I never have any, you know, worries about my online accounts or whatnot. And, Norton 360 with LifeLock has really actually, it has helped. How you spend your time and what you listen to, totally within your control. Your personal information, though, I think we all know this, totally different story. Whenever you shop, whenever you bank, whenever you browse online, your personal information gets out there. You lose control of it. You're exposed to cybercrime. Thankfully, there's Norton 360 with LifeLock to help you get back a sense of control and protect yourself and your personal information. It's an all-in-one membership for your cyber safety that gives you device security, identity theft protection, and a VPN for online privacy and more. Plus, if there's an identity theft-related problem, they have agents who will work to fix it. Now, no one can prevent all cybercrime and identity theft, but Norton 360 with LifeLock is a powerful ally to help protect you in today's connected world. So I will go to the site and I will check my profile every now and then just to make sure that nothing's up. And I can go and see all the times, like when I rent an apartment, when my credit's been checked, or, you know, if I get sucked into getting one of those store credit cards because it's going to give you 25% off. I don't use it after that, but you get the credit thing and you can check it. And when they do that, I have my notifications turned on. So if there's anything going on with my bank statements, with my credit cards, boom, I get a text message that says something's up. Now, fortunately, because I use a wide web of intricate things and I don't, I stay away from certain areas where I will not get money from cash machines that are not official. I haven't had that problem, but God forbid, you want somebody to help you deal with that stuff if it goes wrong, or to help protect you from something going wrong. Sign up today for a Norton 360 with LifeLock membership. And because you're a Majority Report listener, you'll save 25% or more off your first year at Norton.com/majority. That's Norton.com/majority for 25% off. All right, little impeachment update. This was a bit of a problem yesterday for the White House. It's unclear at this point. We don't know, and I suspect, however, let me put it this way. We don't know, but I suspect we might know who the original whistleblower spoke to. Remember, the original whistleblower filed their whistleblower complaint. They're from the CIA. They were talking to a wide range of people who were all expressing discomfort with what was going on with the relationship with Ukraine, with this sort of like outside group of people who were involved in it. Sondland, who was the EU ambassador, Rudy Giuliani, who is Donald Trump's free personal lawyer, and others. And the CIA agent wrote up the whistleblower complaint. Now, they know who the whistleblower is on this committee. Apparently, Devin Nunes keeps trying to leak it in such a way. He can't find anybody who has who lacks the integrity to print it yet, but they will. They will. It'll end up being somebody like what they desperately don't want is to have to give it to someone like Mike Cernovich. But I guarantee you, when this gets leaked, we will trace it back and it will be a Mike Cernovich figure who has gotten the stuff and then puts it into the bloodstream. That's the way they do this. That nobody wants their fingerprints on it. And so until they find somebody unscrupulous like that, they can't start attacking the whistleblower. But the whistleblower is largely irrelevant because the whistleblower just basically said, there are X number of individuals who I've spoken to who expressed reservations or problems of what went on. I suspect that we know who those people are already, even though we don't know who they are. In other words, it could be Vindman. This Lieutenant Colonel Alex S. Vindman, who is the top Ukraine expert on the National Security Council, he could have been one of those guys. We don't know. But the Intelligence Committee has a list of people they want to interview about this. And they must have got the list from somebody. And so I suspect this is where they started, with the whistleblower list. Now, who knows? So in some respects, all of these people are whistleblowers, not official. But they were blowing the whistle to someone who said, I'm going to do the official complaint. So Vindman, apparently, like I said, was the top Ukraine expert on the National Security Council. He was born in Ukraine when it was part of the Soviet Union. I guess he was part of the exodus of Soviet Jews who left, I don't know, 35 years ago, 40 years ago. I know a couple of people like that. And on Tuesday, he told House impeachment investigators that the so-called transcript of the call between Trump and Zelensky was missing some very important words and phrases. And everyone sort of suspected this because of the ellipses that were there.
It's the private part of the conversation.
He attempted to include them. So basically what happens is this. They do a voice recognition in real time. I don't know why they don't do a recording. Supposedly they don't. It seems a little weird to me. But they do voice recognition in real time, and the computer spits out a transcript. But if you look at our show on YouTube, you can see that this is not always accurate. So what happens is the people who were listened on the call, various people, he was one of them, review the transcript, make corrections and whatnot. By the time they got the transcript, certain things had been omitted. And he was like, what? So he's
all because they didn't know that I had a transcript done by very, very talented people, word for word, comma for comma, done by people that do it for a living. We had an exact transcript.
Yeah. You know, the thing is whenever he hits these things, you know, it's like his big tell of about a lie. Like, we had a totally detailed transcript, which, of course, means that we had a totally fixed transcript. So Vindman said, and this is the guy that the right wingers would have you believe we can't trust because he was born in Ukraine. Vindman said the omissions included Mr. Trump's assertion that there were recordings of former Vice President Joe Biden discussing Ukraine corruption and an explicit mention by Ukraine's president, Zelensky, of Burisma Holdings, the energy company whose board employed Biden's son, Hunter. Vindman told House impeachment investigators that he tried to change the reconstructed transcript made by the White House staff to reflect the omissions. But while some of his edits appeared to have been successful, he said those two corrections were not made. He did not testify as to the motives. He just testified as to the facts as he saw them. Apparently, after the call, the colonel reported to what happened to his superior, explaining that I did not think it was proper to demand that a foreign government investigate a U.S. citizen, and I was worried about the implications for the U.S. government's support of Ukraine. In other words, this was a quid pro quo, and they were demanding something that if they didn't get, the U.S. government would withdraw support from Ukraine because they were literally holding back the money. And this is all in his opening remarks. He added this would undermine U.S. national security. He also described confronting Gordon Sondland, who was the U.S. ambassador to the EU, and a hotelier who donated $1 million to Donald Trump's inauguration after the envoy pressed Ukrainian officials to help the Trump administration by investigating the Biden family. Now, here's the thing. We're going to hear all of this. We're going to get all of it. And it's going to be put out once they start with the official impeachment inquiry. Right now, what they're doing is they're still taking depositions. Today, the State Department Ukraine expert, Catherine Croft, will be coming in to testify. They also intend to depose State Department Ukraine expert Christopher Anderson on October 30th. The acting assistant secretary for international security affairs, because they're all Catherine Wheelbarger, is not sure she's going to come in. On Thursday, Timothy Morrison, Morrison was mentioned in the text messages that we read originally 3 or 4 weeks ago. He is the National Security Council's Russia and Europe director. There's going to be Robert Blair, senior advisor to acting chief of staff Mick Mulvaney, is going to come in. There's a bunch of other people coming in, and what they're doing is they're covering every aspect of this. They're trying to determine, get people deposed and have them tell, like, you know, what is the TikTok on how the money was held up? Where did the order to hold the money up come from? What was the reason given to hold up the money? And I suspect some of these other people who Ukraine experts who probably were in the room on the call or can give background as to the importance of this money to Ukraine's security and how that relates to our national security. They're just building the entire case. And if they're smart in the Democratic caucus, that's an if, an important if, they have some trial lawyers who are sitting down and saying, this is how we're going to present this to the American public. We're going to build this case brick by brick. We have very big bricks. They are very sturdy. They are very wide. And we are going to build this case and we're going to show the American public it. So in the coming weeks, I would guess after Thanksgiving, we're going to start to see public hearings. Now, they want to vote on this before the December break and Christmas. I don't see how they're going to do that. Maybe they'll do a whole week. If they do it all in 1 week, we may just do all our coverage of that. I have a feeling they're not going to be able to do it that quickly. But apparently they don't want to distract from the Iowa caucuses. I think that's stupid. It's a perfect companion piece. Dominate the news. Iowa caucuses, impeachment. No room for Donald Trump to do whatever insanity he's going to do as a way of, you know, no story about PG&E hiring too many ethnic minorities.
You got so many fires because you have black firemen. And I can say that because I'm married to a man.
There you go.
You know, it's pretty easy to call me racist for saying that trans Indonesian people are causing LA's fires. But then, you know, we look around. Oh, whoa, wait a second. I'm married to a man.
What, you don't want to have a conversation?
I'm against the death penalty. So the Democrats are going to vote, I believe, in the next 2 days. I think it's on Thursday. The vote comes from a resolution which reaffirms their impeachment inquiry. It will enable public hearings. It will release the witness interviews that have already been taken by the House committees. So everything that is being said now, we're going to have access to. And it will allow the president and his attorneys to cross-examine these witnesses, which should be funny. The resolution states that after the inquiry phase is over, the investigating committees will send their findings to the House Judiciary Committee, which will determine whether to recommend articles of impeachment. Now, the four House committee chairs, government oversight, intel, judiciary, and I think it's financial services, say that they've already collected the information they've already collected paints the picture of a president who has abused his power by using multiple levers of government to press a foreign country to interfere in the 2020 election. Following in the footsteps of the previous impeachment inquiries, the next phase will move from closed depositions to open hearings where the American people will learn firsthand about the president's misconduct. Apparently, in the Nixon impeachment, they did these depositions in the Senate. Then it went back to the House, and that's when it got public. And then it went back to the Senate for, or would have, for the conviction. Liz Cheney has a problem with it. Who cares? And so that's what's going to happen. It's moving forward. There are no more arguments for the Republicans. They're now saying that, like, well, because some of these depositions were taken in private, even though we're going to see them publicly, and even though the president will have the opportunity to cross-examine these witnesses, poison tree, poison fruit, yada, yada, yada. I mentioned the Chicago teacher's strike. They've been on strike for 10 days. The teachers are pissed because Lori Lightfoot ran, at least in part, on trying to protect the teachers. And suddenly there's no money for increasing the number of classrooms, diminishing the number of students in each classroom. There are 40 kids a class. That's too many. That's just way too many. It's too hard to teach with 40 different kids in a class. It's just too difficult. And it's a problem for the students. CTU officials said that there was a possibility of a tentative agreement that could emerge as early as this morning. And with an attempt of trying to put teachers back into school, they've been out since October 16th. There have been 300,000 and 25,000 students and teachers, respectively, that have not gone to school. There are 500 schools in the Chicago public system, or a little more, but there's been pickets there. Here is some footage coming from, is this from Eric Blanc?
It is.
Eric Blanc, who we spoke to, I guess it was last Friday or two Fridays ago, about this teacher's strike. There are, I believe, 9 teachers who were arrested in a peaceful civil disobedience. And they did this. They did this. Pause it for 1 second. They did this out. Where was this? Is out in front of, not in front of a school, actually. It was in, they're from CTU Local 1. This was out in front of an enterprise.
Was this by light of houses? I thought this had something to do with.
I don't think it was in front of. It was in front of a developer building because the Chicago city government has given all sorts of tax breaks and subsidies to these developers.
No.
I know, shocking. I know you can't believe this. And yet, when it comes time for money for schools, nothing. So, I mean, this is what they're now doing, what the teachers are now doing, is basically painting a story. I mean, this is all basically, this is, you know, public relations 101. We mentioned the fact about developers because these people went there and got themselves arrested. And that's the way that you, that's why they do this. That's why you do these type of protests, to force society and those people who push narratives to bring this stuff up. And it's working. So here are some of those teachers who got arrested to make it clear that Chicago continues to support real estate interests and business interests over their children.
Whose streets? Our streets.
Whose streets?
Our streets.
Whose kids?
Our kids.
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 I don't know what TIFFs are.
How sick, though. I mean, just this is one thing that just on a basic visual level, it's like people who educate children are getting arrested because they're demanding the basic resources to do their job. That I mean, this is like should be a 30-second story.
It's good. Good
Man,
to use.
We live in a sick society.
Good to use civil disobedience to take up police resources, like that van that they might have filled with like Jordans and tried to entrap some kids on like a poor neighborhood. Like,
they took the Jordan van. We're gonna give these kids. We got a whole new box of fucking Jordans, but the teachers are all like, "Oh, we should educate them. How about we throw them in the can when they try to get their new Air Ones?"
Well, you say they're not investing in their kids, but I doubt that the kids of the people making these cuts and carrying out this austerity are attending under-resourced public schools.
They're all, I mean, if I remember from the 2011 strike, a lot of those people were sending their kids to private schools. And TIF stands for Tax Increment Financing, which is a tool that Chicago uses to generate money for economic development in specific geographic areas. So they have like zones, and they basically are able to pay for generating, development, real estate development, but they won't pay for the schools.
I work overtime to send my kid to an art magnet school. So these ain't my children.
That's actually like literally.
No, that's literally true. I'm just doing it with a stupid voice.
There's two lawsuits happening in New York that I just want to make people aware of. One is a follow-up of sorts from the interview we did with Carissa Phelps in Las Vegas. She was the sex trafficking survivor. She had some controversial opinions that we had talked about on that day regarding Sesta Fosta and the who is financing the sort of lax enforcement against the sex workers. She didn't believe there was such a thing as sex workers, which I was quite clear with her, I think is a mistake, but...
Soros is doing it.
That's basically what she had said. However, the basic premise of what she was talking about was that she had been trafficked as a 12-year-old girl. She was caught up in the foster care system, fell through the cracks, was preyed upon by a guy who trafficked her and ultimately had her as a working, you know, basically to he would get paid for her to be raped in a hotel in Fresno, California, but a small town around there. Maybe it was Fresno. And she said 20 years later, when she had gotten out of that that situation, she went back to these hotels, and the same thing was still happening. And after 10 years of activism, she basically decided that the route to follow was to sue. She said about 95% of this stuff happens in motels that are owned by large corporations. And it was to sue these corporations to force them to either shut down or to protect and prevent these types of, you know, businesses in quotes from operating out of their hotels. So it is a different attorneys working on this case, is my understanding. They are working somewhat with some of the lawyers that we spoke down to in Las Vegas. But this is in the, I think, the New York Daily News or the Post, I think it was. A $10 million suit brought by a woman who is now in her 20s, identified by the initials SJ. She was a 10-year-old girl when she was raped, tortured, and beaten, sold for sex at two New York motels as the staff turned a blind eye to her obvious abuse. Suit was filed here just down the street in Brooklyn Federal Court. It's the first of its kind in New York. Claims that Wyndham Hotels and Resorts and Choice Hotels Corporation were complicit in the girl's abuse by operating franchises that chose, quote, to ignore the open and obvious presence of sex trafficking at their properties. She claims that she was sold for sex as many as 15 to 20 times a day at a Howard Johnson in Jamaica, Queens, operated by Wyndham, and an Econo Lodge in the Bronx, operated by Choice Hotels, between 2006 and 2009, between the ages of 10 and 13, when she was. She met her sex trafficker shortly after she escaped from a foster home where she was being sexually and physically abused, the suit says, adding that she entered foster care after her father was caught molesting her. The girl's trafficker, a 25-year-old man, gained her trust, took her virginity, forced her to service his clients, telling her how you make daddy happy is by making them happy. Wyndham and Choice Hotels have since signed on to a tourism child protection code of conduct created by a leading anti-trafficking policy organization. And the code of conduct outlines six steps companies can take to prevent child sex trafficking. But, you know, as we heard from Carissa Phelps, like, you know, it's quite obvious what's going on there. they have cameras half the time anyways. They can see what's happening. They just choose to continue to profit off it. Occasionally, some other guests may call the cops because they see something, or there's some big violent event or something that calls for a warrants calling the cops. The cops show up. They arrest the people in that moment and never come back until there is a specific reason to, as opposed to saying like, hey, this seems to be a functioning sex traffic den. So hopefully, and this is, again, this is why when the system breaks down like this, because basically the greed, you know, who knows what the relationships are between these hotel franchises and local governments. Three or four hotels in a small municipality can make a big difference to the local economy. And that gives that those people power over the city lawmakers or city managers or whatnot, and maybe the police departments. So this is where, you know, lawsuits like this, where you can interrupt the sort of the business that's going on, are really important. Meanwhile, the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, has brought a lawsuit against ExxonMobil. It's in its second week. This is basically, the argument is that Exxon knew, and we see Maura Healey in Massachusetts bringing a similar suit. Exxon knew about global climate change and lied to its shareholders as to what was going to happen in terms of climate change, and therefore, you know, inflating the value of their stock or avoiding full transparency. And Rex Tillerson is going to be on the stand. They're going to be questioning him about the use of a burner email account where he used the name Wayne Trecker.
I remember that.
Wayne is Tillerson's middle name.
He's such a man.
The Attorney General staff discovered that along with the official email account under his name, under his real name, Tillerson had this other account. The company has destroyed tracker emails from before August 18th, 2015, because it had, quote, failed to disable its automatic file sweep deletion program.
Whoopsie daisy.
Yeah. That happens. For the tracker account, even though the emails were subject to subpoena, state said in its memorandum about the emails, Stephen Gillers, a professor at New York School of Law, said in an interview, it's hard to understand how Tillerson's emails could not be highly relevant here. He spent a decade as CEO and chairman. To the extent that some emails are not available from his accounts or the accounts of others, the court loses information, and information is the cornerstone of accurate verdicts. So what they'll do is they'll eat the fine that they ultimately get for destroying the incriminating evidence.
Money well spent.
And we'll see what happens in the context of the greater lawsuit, whether there are any criminal charges that I could guess theoretically could be brought subsequent to a civil action. Folks, we're going to take a break and head into the fun half. We've been doing like long first halves this week.
Yeah. I feel like the real dark web is like emails of fossil fuel executives and financial institutions.
Just ideas.
That'd be awesome.
Just ideas.
Some hackers.
Why does Brett Weinstein keep making jokes about me lowering the collective IQ of the elevator? I'm married to a guy.
How come every time I get in the elevator with these guys, they say, going down?
Sam Harris threatened to kill me. His eye twitched even more than usual. He was almost as mad as when he talks about Muslims.
Folks, just a reminder, this show relies on you for its support. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. And when you do, you not only get the first half without commercials, but you get a second half that you can choose to just listen. Today I'm just going to listen to the second half. Tomorrow I'll listen to the first half. Doesn't matter. It's all good. And not only that, you get to walk around saying, like, I'm a member of the Majority Report. That is a lot of cachet in certain very narrow, very, very narrow areas.
A lot of clout.
A lot of clout in very, very confined spaces. You can go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Again, if you're someone who wants access to the fun half, but you don't have the financial resources, send me an email, majorityreporters@gmail.com. We got a lot of requests over the past couple of days. And it's going to take us a little time to get to them, but we will get to them, I promise. Just put in the subject line, need the fun half, something like that. And we will get to you, I promise. We're digging through those emails, though. We get about, 300 emails a day now at that address. So it gets a little bit complicated. But also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Sign up for the AM Quickie. I keep telling you to do this, and I know you have not subscribed yet. You can subscribe for free. Just do it through iTunes or your Google Play or whatever. We have all the links to subscribe at amquickie.com. Also, follow us on Instagram. Subscribe to YouTube channel. Come on, guys. Let's do this. What are we at with the YouTube channel?
689,000.
Let's get to 700. Really? We're closing in on 700.
Crushing it, yeah.
I got to get my button. I didn't get that button.
There's a button? Where do you get 666?
I went out with a buddy of mine, and he had two daughters who were like, one was in college, one was a senior in high school. They were asking how many subscribers I had on YouTube. And I said, like, I don't know, like 650,000 or something like that. And they're like, oh, you must have the silver and the gold play buttons. And I'm like, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. And I just found out I was supposed to get it. So, get one for 700,000. Michael, what went on yesterday in this room?
We talked about the PG&E fires and what's really causing them. On last night's show, we talked with Shama Sawant, helped re-elect her to the Seattle City Council. Crystal Ball.
Doing that, you can make Jeff Bezos have wasted a lot of money.
That's right. It's good for the cause of socialism, and it's a nice shot at Dr. Evil. Then there's also Crystal Ball, and I talked about the commonalities of these global uprisings from Chile to Lebanon to Ecuador, why the press is ignoring it, why Pete Buttigieg is the worst, and how painful it is for CNN to deal with the Bernie Sanders surge. And then Harvey Kaye and I talked about Chicago, Wisconsin, and really went deep into the Chile story. You know what they're chanting in Chile? One of the chants in Chile is that neoliberalism was born here and it will die here.
Hell yeah.
And so we went really deep
from your
into
mouth
the,
to God's ears, Chileans.
Indeed, with the Pinochet CIA Chicago Boys history and how it's playing out today. And then a whole bunch in the post game, including these new revelations in Brazil. Patreon.com/TMBS. This weekend's Illicit History with Pepe Escobar on the Silk Road, China and Russia. And snag your tickets. I don't know what the count is, but we're in the final third for Philly World Cafe with Crystal Ball, Artesia Balthrop, Emma Viglin, and we're two away from 3,000 patrons. So go for it. Patreon.com/TMBS.
Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, we celebrated Mischief Night with the scariest show on the internet, Minion Death Cult. It's very funny. If you guys have never heard it before, they find the scariest, most deranged, and just like cracked and weird posts on the internet from some baby boomers, but just like chuds of all ages, I think. And they read them slow enough to grasp their inanity. So we shared some dumb Halloween stories about our own lives. And then we looked at an evangelical plot to infiltrate Halloween stores. Then we commemorated last year's November 4th Antifa Super Soldier Revolution. Everyone remember that. And then we recalled the InfoWars attack on yours truly earlier this year. Seems like longer ago than that, but you know, things are happening more than they used to these days. And we close it out with some Tim Pool Joker posting. Also, this week on our premium feed for our patrons, we have a new episode of History is a Weapon with Sean KB and Matt Chrisman. And they talk about, I mean, I could listen to those two talk about anything historical, but they talk about suburbia in this one and the invention of suburbia and the middle class as a way to conceal the class conflict undergirding everything in capitalist society. So part one is out now and part two will be out on Friday for our patrons. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
And Matt.
A literary hangover. I did a sort of materialist episode on the materialist and political origins of the Salem witch trials. So check that out for Halloween.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920 is the fun half.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh.
Rand Paul. I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you. You fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
You think I might be a Nazi?
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up. Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.